CliffCentral.com. I don't know what these people are singing about. It doesn't sound like English. It's Halsey and Khalid Eastside and Benny Bianco. Well, yeah, I didn't make any of that up. That's truly what it is. It's nice, though.
It is nice.
All right, it's Monday morning. It's just after 7 o'clock. So much going on in the news. We've got to talk about Sharknado 6.
Oh, yeah, it's the final one, Gareth. Final one.
Have they said that?
No, it's called that. That is it. Sharknado. That's it.
Have you ever watched these movies, like from beginning to end? Quite seriously.
You need to watch Sharknado to understand the importance of Sharknado.
Sharknado had to have been a low point in cinema history, but that was the best one because they've got steadily worse.
Well, look, I mean, every Sharknado's got a new thing which it tackles. So, obviously, Sharknado 1 was just, Sharknado.
Yeah, it was Sharks.
Sharknado 2 was just literally called the second one. Sharknado 3 was called Oh Hell No. Oh. Sharknado 4 was The Fourth Awakens. And then Sharknado 5 was called Global Swarming.
All right, so
and
here's,
now we got Sharknado 6, which is called The Last Sharknado.
Oh. Let's take a listen to the trailer. Maybe this will get you excited.
Something's not right.
Get out, enjoy some time with the family on this beautiful day. There won't be anything quite like it again.
Sharks everywhere.
Shark! Look out!
If we stop the first shark there, we can stop them all.
Time travel's risky. If we do it right, we can reset everything back to the way it should be.
They're going back in time to kill the sharks in Sharknado.
Welcome to prehistoric times.
I know this is extremely confusing, but we're all very much alive.
Look out!
Where are we?
Welcome to Merlin's castle.
There's a Sharknado coming.
Dragon sharks?
Dragon sharks.
Good luck with that. Bye.
The vortex is collapsing.
Come on, let's go.
The sharks are coming. The sharks are coming.
Let's go kill some sharks.
Come on.
The British are throwing flying sharks at us!
No!
It's the most steaming heap of shit you've ever seen in your life.
A shark comes out of the water and eats a T-Rex.
Yeah.
Because they go back in time.
I've never seen something so pathetic. Ever.
It's the sixth one, Liam.
It's so bad.
Give credit to a franchise.
And there are sharks on surfboards and all kinds of stupid things in this.
Dragon sharks and
yeah, guys, they have to go back in time to prevent the Sharknado from happening in future.
And it says based on a true story
of the incredible true story.
Well, incredible, I get it.
No, it says that based on a true story of a series of movies about sharks.
I can't.
It's a new level of stupid. It's the stupidest thing
I've
ever seen.
You just need to watch the trailer. You don't need to watch the movie.
I've also never seen so many has-beens all in one.
No, there was Tara Reid.
We haven't heard of her since she had that botched cosmetic surgery.
Well, which one? Looked, yeah. Well,
like geez. Her boobs aren't the same size.
Well, look, I think she got
a squint.
Look, I think Sharknado helped her get her back together. But then there's the blonde guy from Beverly Hills 90210.
Ian Ziering. His name is Ian, not Ian. Ian Ziering.
Even though it's spelled I-A-N.
Yes.
Jeez, how bad.
Yeah, but guys, if you're the main character of Sharknado, you're going to start calling yourself Ian.
Ian Ziering.
Vivica A. Fox is in it as well.
How much?
Vivica A. Fox. Yes. Who else?
That's all I can recognize in this list of casts. There's a Casey Scirbo.
No.
No, Jonathan Bennett, Rainn Michaels, Chuck Hittinger.
What's the Tyrannosaurus Rex's name?
That we Maud. Don't know.
It's a woman T-Rex.
See, it's not good and well when you're a shark and you're Sharknadoing, but once you've hit land and eaten something, how do you get back?
Don't know. They don't answer that.
I guess they don't think of the next step to these sharks. No.
But now you have dragon sharks in this one.
Wow. So they're going to fly
new
back.
Level. Oh, it's and not shoot even, out fire.
So it's not even airing in cinemas. No, it's going straight to TV.
They're business orientated, these people, see? Like, straight to TV.
I do think there could be a fun market for getting Sharknado 6 on, streaming or whatever. Inviting a bunch of your friends around, and when something dumb happens, you all have to do something.
Mm.
Like either to have a drink or, to run around the house or to lose an item of clothing or whatever, you could end up having some really, really stupid
it's
games.
A great idea.
Yeah.
Every time the word shark is mentioned.
Yes. Oh my God.
It's a shark.
You have a shot for a shark mention.
Yeah.
Ben, what is wrong with my team, Man United? Are we the new Arsenal, says Tabo? Do you think it's time for Jose to go? Am I investing way too much?
I don't know, Tabo. I don't think Jose's got the mix right. I know that's a very general comment, but the thing is he's wanting to buy new players, but do you really think star players in the current foundation is going to make a difference? I just don't see it. Like, Sanchez was a reflex buy, which was a waste of money. I don't know. Like, in the defense, they just need some hard bosses in the defense, not some hairstyles.
They need the guy who directed Sharknado 6. He can make miracles happen.
No, they do. And I think what's going to happen, just further to your point, is about, yes, they could become the new Arsenal. But the thing is, Arsenal's not going to let go of that middle-of-the-road status anytime soon. So there'll be a different version. But yeah, Man City's basically going to win. Unless Liverpool do something absolutely incredible, which I highly doubt. Tonight they play against Crystal Palace. But no, it's Man City's to win again.
All right, lots of people this morning are talking about the state capture inquiry. They're talking about Gabisi Jonas and Fakie Mento, who are two of the first witnesses at the state capture inquiry. Of course, both of them were involved right at the beginning with the Guptas, before any of us really even knew what the Guptas were up to and what they were doing. So the two of them will be called. Then a lot of people tweeting about this, but we know that Cyril was engaged in a lengthy discussion with the Gestapo Malema on the issue of economics, and this is what he's proposed as a workable system for South Africa. Someone says, as the Venezuelan refugees crisis spirals out of control, neighbors are abruptly closing their doors. Ecuador and Peru are tightening entry requirements, and in Brazil yesterday, a mob chased Venezuelan refugees back over the border. Oh. It's really, really bad in Venezuela. It couldn't have collapsed in a more dramatic and terrible fashion. And this is Julius's example of how the economy should run. You know, he was big a supporter and what would you call it? He was a
disciple almost.
A real admirer of the Venezuelan president Hugo Chavez when he started this socialist implementation of his very hard left approach to economics. And Julius went over there, and it's the only time I think he's ever been overseas. He went over to visit Venezuela, and he said, this is the way we've got to do our things in South Africa. Hmm. And I wonder how he feels about that now. Hmm. I want someone to answer that. Anyway, we'll find out what happens with the state capture inquiry. A year ago, I suppose there was no hope for something like this to happen, yet here we are. Here we are. So we must take small victories. The Commission of Inquiry to State Capture is going to begin today. Should we be excited about that? I think so. Maybe they'll discover a whole bunch of things. Someone says, I cannot believe Anthea plays PUBG. She just leveled up in my book. So some people very impressed with that.
I really do feel like we missed out on a trend, but I've never heard of PUBG before this.
It's okay, sir. It's okay.
Okay, that's it. You know, you were mentioning Sharknado a little earlier. Well, if we were talking about some bad movie scenarios, Kevin Spacey just released his first movie since that entire Me Too saga.
Can you imagine a Spacey-nado?
A whole bunch of
Kevins landing on a beach and grabbing your kids.
Here's the Kevin Spacey music.
Spacey-nado 3.
In its first day in theaters, it's made $126 US dollars.
Is that it? That's all?
No extra zeros after that.
That's embarrassing.
That is all it is.
Wow, talk about falling down.
Phew, how sad. This is a movie, it opened without any fanfare at all. Even the marketing behind it was slack to the point where it only opened in 10 cinemas.
What is the movie?
It is called The Billionaire's Boys Club.
Ooh, cheap, oh, cheap. That is a terrible title for it to be involved right now.
I mean, for Kevin Spacey to release a movie called The Billionaire's...
I heard Spacey's looking to pick up The Lost Boys at Bird Island as a passion project.
That's why there was no marketing. Every marketer said, I'm not doing that right now.
I didn't realize that until now. Yeah, it's kind of, well, it is what it is. But I see it all as a business thing because this film was made 2.5 years ago. So I guess the production company was sitting on this being like, well, what are we going to do with this? So we might as well release it and take it as it comes.
How do you make a couple of hundred bucks out of it?
But how, do you end up with such low profits? $126. I mean, that means nobody went to see it. Plus, they told everybody else not to go and see it.
The film cost $15 million to make, and it has a 13% audience approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. 13%.
But what a horrible title for Spacey to be involved in.
Billionaire's Boys Club.
Oh, my God.
I wonder how... I don't even think it will last much, but anyway. Yeah, it co-stars Ansel Elgort. Remember him from Baby Driver and you would think perhaps people would go to watch just based on that, but it just proves, I guess, the strength of the court of public opinion. Once you've gone down, people don't want anything to do with you at all.
Yeah, he's poison.
Mm.
So, all right, here's a good story, because we all know plenty of well-meaning people, right? Especially young millennials who are progressive and feel that, you know, the world of work, for example, is not for them, and they need to change the world and prove something about humanity. So this young American couple, Lauren and Jay, were in their 20s. They quit their jobs in 2017 to embark on a trip around the world. Jay is a vegan and she is a vegetarian, and they decided they were wasting their lives working.
Uh-oh.
These millennials. I've grown tired of spending the best hours of my day in front of a glowing rectangle, of coloring the best years of my life in swaths of gray and beige, Austin wrote on his blog before he quit. That's the guy. I've missed too many sunsets while my back was turned. Too many thunderstorms went unwatched. And too many gentle breezes were unnoticed. The couple documented their year-long journey on social media until it came to a tragic and gruesome end.
Oh, no.
In Tajikistan, a country with a known terrorist presence.
Uh-oh.
They were riding their bikes in the country on July the 29th when they were rammed by a car. According to CBS News, five men got out of the car and stabbed them to death, along with two other cyclists, one from Switzerland and another one from the Netherlands.
Jeez.
2 days later, ISIS released a video showing the same men sitting in front of the black ISIS flag. They looked at the camera and vowed to kill disbelievers, according to the New York Times. And part of the reason that these two wanted to go on this bike trip was because they wanted to prove that even in terrorist countries, we believe in the complexity of our fellow humans, and that we can show that there is a human solidarity, that actually you can get on your bike and ride through the really dangerous countries, and you won't be touched because people are kind. Well, it didn't go so well.
No. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of a friend of mine who's literally 2 weeks ago packed up and left for Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working from there. And it seems really idyllic, you know, these work spots that she's found where everyone takes their shoes off and then they go and sit by the pool, and
you get free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and all these expats working, and everyone is there for a reason. They've all got some sort of tragic story, you know, being breaking up.
It's from, like a big group therapy session.
Yeah, it is, breaking up from, and no one knows each other until they know each other once they're there. People whose fiancés died on their wedding day, and people with these really tragic stories. And my friend feels a little left out because she doesn't really have a tragic story. She just went there for the fun of it. But she's being affected by these earthquakes that are out there at the moment. It's 100 k's away from her in Lombok. She's in Bali.
She's not being affected by all those sob stories.
No, well, now everyone's out of their hotel rooms and their B&Bs. Mm. She was messaging us at between 11 and 3 this morning.
Jesus.
She's just standing out on the streets.
At all.
Well, there was one a few weeks ago which killed 460 people.
Oh, wow. Shucks.
This one, it's the same magnitude but killed only 2 people. It was actually quite deep. But she's got an app, and every hour or so, there's a little warning that comes up and says, hold on to your tits.
Oh, no.
And then the whole room starts shaking.
Well, they evacuate immediately. And she said the swimming pool where she is was gyrating so much it lost half its water. I said to her, are you not petrified?
Yeah, and now you're not considering going back to
In other
home.
Words, paradise has changed into hell. Because Bali, people go there because it's beautiful and, you know, it's this tropical environment and everybody's there on holiday and it feels like a big party. Mm. But obviously now, with all of this going on, it's turned into a really dangerous place.
Yeah, it's very scary.
I again, find like this couple who decided to cycle through Tajikistan to show that humans are kind. Like, there's such naivety. There are genuinely bad people in the world. There really are awful, awful people who mean you ill, who, if they can get the chance, will try to kill you. Mm. And there's no amount of you trying to persuade me that it's just my misunderstanding, or that it's, you know, cultural and societal structures that have made people like this. Whatever the reasons are, you don't want to go on a bike through Tajikistan.
Doesn't matter how many positive vibes you're putting out.
No,
it's not going to help.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to change the molecular structure of a psychopath. You know? It's just the saddest story, because these two were killed and stabbed to death. So here's what they said just before they did it, just to show you how naive they were. "You read the papers and you're led to believe the world is a big, scary place," said Jay. "People," the narrative goes, "are not to be trusted. People are bad. People are evil. I don't buy it," he continued. "Evil is a make-believe concept we've invented to deal with the complexities of fellow humans, holding values and beliefs and perspectives that are different from our own. By and large, humans are kind. Self-interested sometimes, myopic sometimes, but kind."
Oh gosh, the
generous
irony.
"And wonderful and kind."
When it's down in black and white.
Wow, it's just unbelievable. I mean, They were smashed into by a car and then stabbed to death. It's just horrible.
Gareth.
No, I know it's horrible, but that's what happens to dumb people. Sorry, there's no way to put it that's friendly.
Yeah, there's being hopeful. There's wishing things were better. There's hashtagging for good.
And then there's reality.
You need to know what your. No thanks. Call it a day.
All right, couple of emails. Are you ready for some of these?
Mm-hmm.
We are 3 days away. First of all, let me remind you from our next exclusive movie screening, The Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington. We're officially out of tickets to give away. We cannot wait, though, to spend some time with all the people who have got their exclusive tickets. The rest of the CliffCentral.com crew will be there with some popcorn and some Coke, and we will enjoy the action thriller showcasing Denzel Washington at his best on Thursday, this Thursday, the 23rd of August, the day before it hits cinemas nationwide. Denzel reprising his signature role as Robert McCall in The Equalizer 2, which hits cinemas on August 24th. Count down with us by using the hashtag TheEqualizer2.
Very fun.
So I promised you some emails. Gareth, if you like The Bachelor, there's a TV show that is sort of like a behind the scenes of The Bachelor, obviously fictional, but I can see how the producers could be doing some of the shady stuff that they've done in the TV show, along with some creative editing of footage. The show is called Unreal. The first two seasons were decent, but it's gone downhill since then. You watched it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a two or three season kind of thing. I watched the first season, and it was a very novel concept, because you can look at that and go, that's exactly how this must work.
Well,
it's all about like a big production room. There's a camera per person, and they're going, well, she suffers from anxiety, so how about we don't give her a meds for 2 days and see how she deals with the date?
Yeah, like rats in a lab. Yeah, they play with them.
I don't think that's that far from the truth.
When no,
they put
I don't
shows
think so
together,
either.
That's what they're looking for.
Mm. No, and I mean, I'm quite obsessed with The Bachelor and Bachelorette. Yeah. I watched this back show, Unreal, but it just didn't do it for me. I didn't continue watching it.
So,
but apparently they're not even allowed to talk to each other unless the cameras are rolling.
Yeah.
It's all very, very put on.
But guys, that's what we must do. With this new Essay Bachelor that's coming up, we must commit to a show. Because, you know, we always talk about shows. We watch them in our own time. We give our own things. As a team, we must collectively actually watch. We must watch this every week.
Oh, I'll definitely be watching. Look,
I think it's going to be very cringe. I think it's going to be great
so
conversation.
So much cringe.
And I think we must do this every day.
All right.
Step it up.
I'll watch it. I'm not afraid to watch The Bachelor. I think it could be quite hilarious.
The Bachelor South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just a very basic human being.
Careful now, you basic bitch.
I am, because I just get sucked into these tacky reality shows. And one that I recently got sucked into is The Real Housewives of Johannesburg.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. You guys are missing out. So, firstly, yes, these five women have money. They're quite wealthy. The one is questionable. But because we're used to a certain type of lifestyle and drama from the international franchise. Yeah. When it comes to South Africa, it's like, no, it's not the same.
Everyone just gets on.
Yeah, so you now just watch it and you go, come on, guys, this is so...
So you mean they're not fighting? There's no...
They're fighting over the most dumbest things. So the first episode, it's on its third episode now. The first episode, the plot was around the one housewife offered a dress of hers to another housewife to wear to a wedding. And they rocked up to this wedding and shock, horror, gasp. The housewife wasn't wearing the dress that she was given. And that was the source of conflict around the entire episode.
I mean, in America.
And you're thinking really like what's going on.
In America, they're horrible to each other. But I do hear Ben's point here, and maybe we should all get into this because then we can laugh together about how stupid it is if it's stupid. And if it turns out to be great entertainment, we'll all be entertained.
Well, that's it. That's what entertainment is, guys. Like Sharknado. It's Sharknado. You're not going to watch it and go, well, you know, that's one of the best movies. I think the plot... No, you're going to watch it because it's fucking sharks coming out of the sky biting children. I mean, entertainment's entertainment.
Well, I've heard there are two brilliant shows that I still have to get into. The one, I can't believe how I've missed it because it's been around for like 2-3 years now or whatever. Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, gotta watch the kids on Netflix.
Yeah. I've got to watch this. So I've been persuaded.
Kevin Spacey loved that show.
By some people I spoke to over the weekend that I need to watch Stranger Things. Apparently it's like a classic old kind of Goonies style.
Yeah, if you like Goonies, it's bunch got of kids. 80s feel to it. It's good. It's a very captivating show.
No, it sounds good. So that's the one. And the other one that's just launched, and I see lots of ads for it all over social media and all the rest, Matt Groening, the guy who did The Simpsons, has just done a series called Disenchanted.
I saw it on the Netflix menu last night.
Right. So apparently this is about a really a modern take on a princess story. But the princess is completely non-princess-like. She doesn't want to be a princess. She wants
to lick her balls.
Yeah, she does all kinds. She does disgusting things, and she's like very human. But it's apparently hilarious. So it's like Cinderella in the modern age, and I can't wait to watch this. I'm really, really excited about it because I love The Simpsons. I love Matt Groening. I love what he does, and if he's got an original take on something.
It's not animated, is it?
It's animated.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great.
That's his thing, yeah.
That should look like her balls.
Well, let me see if I can find your trailer, and you can at least hear what it's all about. I didn't know princesses had balls.
You said she did odd things.
Okay.
Well, that's the first thought, naturally, that pops in your head. Got you.
Let's just see. Maybe I can find you a little preview of Disenchantment. Sorry, not Disenchanted. Disenchantment. So here's the official trailer. Take a listen to this, see if this is a...
Your presence is requested at the royal wedding of Prince Giesbert of Bentwood and Princess Bean.
Do you take this man to be your husband?
No!
He kills himself.
God, this is a bad time to be coming down off of that high.
So how'd it go?
I want to be in charge of my own destiny.
I want to see the outside world.
I want to get rid of all the diseases plaguing mankind and replace them with worse ones.
Bean, you're out of control.
Okay.
I don't even know what to yell at you.
I'm not so bad.
Well, you did kill that one guy.
I'd be fine if someone could just slide my head up a bit.
Isn't there a point in everyone's life where they need to go and figure out who they are? Whew, I'm a good butcher.
This is a pet shop.
What's this feeling I don't want to drink away?
That's hope.
I've got a bad idea.
What's bad about it? Oh, never mind, I see.
It looks pretty cute, man. It looks like really, really sweet. I think I might get into this.
That's my new favorite definition of hope.
What?
The feeling that you don't want to drink away.
All right. Well, we've got some interesting stuff coming up in a little while. Get back to some other communications, some messages, and some emails. But I did want to let you know that coming up, we got Ray Funnell, who is with the Sunflower Fund. They are launching their 2018 Sunflower Day campaign, which will be celebrated on the 21st of September. and their call for entries in their Everest challenge of 2018. That's, of course, a team challenge where they're going to climb the equivalent height of Mount Everest in under 17 hours. It'll take place at the popular Westcliff Stairs in Johannesburg. So all they're going to do is run up and down there until they've done the equivalent height of Mount Everest. Sounds so pretty hectic.
That's like a year then.
The target is 170 reps of the Westcliff Stairs. You reckon you could do it, Ben?
Give me a week, yeah.
A week.
A week?
Those Westcliff Stairs, everyone talks about it. Like, if you live in Johannesburg, you've got to do the Westcliff Stairs. Even if you just go walk a dog or something. They really are quite a thing.
They're doing it from 7 in the morning until midnight. On that same night. So they're only giving you, I don't know how many hours that is. My maths is terrible and we're not going to spend hours trying to figure it out. No, don't do it. It's a fundraising event for the Sunflower Fund and participating teams will be encouraged to assist with the fundraising effort by getting sponsorships for their teams. So if you think you can do it, we'll get Ray to tell us a little bit more. Ray actually is a leukemia survivor himself, so he has an interest in just exactly how much good work can be done by the Sunflower Fund.
17 hours.
You want to get involved. Is that it? 17 hours?
We got it.
I saw people using their fingers. Did you write it down? Show me your work.
I had to count twice.
This is ridiculous.
I lost count.
Oh, my God. All right. This one came through from Daryl. Daryl says, I've been listening to you from the beginning. I had to first figure out WeChat back then. I was based in Malaysia and worked all over Asia. I traveled a lot. The show was with me from Australia to Pakistan, Japan and China to Singapore and Indonesia and everywhere in between. The app then changed everything. I downloaded all the podcasts and could listen anywhere, anytime. Fucking awesome. The show's amazing content, fresh, educational, thought-provoking and really funny. I'd often burst out laughing on the plane and there was definitely something about being more well-informed than most. I love the team and all the different makeups, even when there's a day with Leanne, a day with Gord, Poppy, and everybody else. Sia and Ben. I'm a big fan, and my wife would say I'm addicted, enough of me blowing smoke up your backsides. What the hell have you done with the app? Recently, you've mentioned the issues, and Ben chips in and blames the phones that people use. I love you, but F you, Ben. My phone is new, current, and fully updated. I've deleted the app, installed it again, and I still face issues. Issues that drive me to drink, and this is a problem for me because I'm working in the UK now, and the English frown upon a slightly drunk South African in a bad mood in the morning because his Cliff Central app won't work. Please sort this out.
Well, Daryl, first up, settle down.
Yeah. Have a drink.
Secondly, your phone's an iPhone, isn't it?
No, so there is a problem, and we actually have someone working
on
this.
Hey, Daryl. Hey. Yes, it is.
No, there is a problem, and Daryl's not wrong. So what we've actually done is we've commissioned another app upgrade, so that should be available very shortly. But we've got people working on it at the moment. We've realized there's a problem. You know, every time they update all the software on these phones, it changes the way things work, and we have to keep updating the app at the same time. So we've done a couple of versions of this update, and there's a new one coming soon.
Daryl, from my understanding, basically iOS code has given us a bit of a lemon.
Yes.
So it's nothing personal.
No, don't take it so personally, Daryl.
But that is why if you have an iPhone, you might have had some troubles recently.
But it's also worth mentioning that there are other ways that you can download our podcasts. A lot of people go straight to some other podcast app, and there are plenty of them. I don't mind what you use to listen to us, so you can go and get it on any podcast app, download it, and listen to it when it suits you. That's the beauty of what we're doing with podcasts. So Ray Funnel's here. He is with the Sunflower Fund, and you are going to try and get everybody to climb the equivalent height of Mount Everest in support of the Sunflower Fund. Are you mad?
No, I don't think we're mad. I think we just like challenges.
No, I like this.
Maybe for me it was because I went through leukemia, and that was really a challenge for me.
So was your leukemia when you were a kid, or when did it
start? No, I had an adult leukemia.
So you know something about what the Sunflower Fund is trying to do here.
Absolutely.
Because the cause is a very good one. It's one that I think very many people would like to be associated with, would like to do whatever they can to assist. And obviously, this is now 10 years after you had a transplant, right?
Yes, I was bone quite lucky. I was a complete match with my brother.
Oh, wow.
So they're able to sort of delete my own bone marrow, and I got a transplant from my brother. And so I've got basically my brother growing inside me now, providing blood for me every day.
That's amazing. I mean, that really is an incredible thing. Apparently very painful thing to go through, these bone marrow transplants.
Not quite. No, it's quite an elegant process. They do it not actually with the bone marrow, but with stem cells.
Oh, yeah?
So it's a bit like a blood transfusion. So really just a bag of stem cells that you receive.
And that's just incredible. Your brother managed to make that donation, and now both of you are managing very well.
Yes, yeah.
That's terrific.
So it was a nervous time when my wife actually drove the little bag of stem cells from the one hospital to the other.
She had to take it.
She had to, yeah.
Wow.
And you know women drivers.
What?
Why am I getting...
It's only bad looks from Sia and Leanne. The rest of us
agree.
Excuse
me while I clutch my pearls.
Okay, so I mean, when you went through this, you obviously know what it must be like for an adult, and it's hard enough to figure your way through that. But for kids, it's so much harder, right?
It's unimaginable, I think, for a child, because obviously adults can work their way through it mentally, break things down into a couple of hours of a day and get through a day. But I don't know how the kids manage, really. And unfortunately, it's mostly kids that are impacted by the illness.
Yeah, so the Sunflower Fund, who've been around for some time now, they do their best to give hope and life to many South Africans who are not as fortunate as you were in finding a match with your sibling. And they have they obviously have many ways that you can get involved and you can help them. But for more information about becoming a blood stem cell donor or to donate to the Sunflower Fund, you can actually call this number 0800 12 10 82. You can visit the Sunflower Fund online. They're at sunflowerfund.org.za. Are there a lot of people on the bone marrow registry or on, you know, the organ registry where there is one?
I think the registry is right around the world. In South Africa, I believe we've got about 65,000 people on the registry.
We probably need a lot more.
A lot more, yeah. Because actually what you're trying to find is your ancestors. Your DNA, your exact DNA is floating out there somewhere in the world. And it really depends on where, if you trace it back, where you came from.
Because if it isn't a match, it's no use to you.
No. Unfortunately, it has to be pretty much an exact match. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Jeez. So if it wasn't your brother, you would have had a very tough time, right?
I probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is why more and more people should get involved in at least registering themselves on this bone marrow registry. You could save a life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's so easy. I think it's just a simple blood test they do, and they use that blood test then to look at your DNA typing to get you on the registry.
So, Ray, are you totally okay now? Everything's 100%?
Well, I'm okay other than doing these crazy events.
You know? Yeah, but I mean, if for you to do them, you must be in pretty good physical health.
Yes, no, I am. I think what happened when I got out of the hospital, I spent about a year in hospital going through different procedures. And I dreamt of other things, mountains. And when I got out, I actually wanted to go and put these things into practice because you've got this absolute passion for life.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss out. And I think the last 8 years, I've climbed nine mountains now. So that's been my...
Incredible. So you've actually been to these places, but now with this challenge, you want people to climb the equivalent of Mount Everest.
Well, I think so.
It's no mean feat.
I think if you can't go to the mountain, bring the mountain to Joburg. And I think it's just going to be – it's the third time we're doing this event, and I think it'll be as fun as the previous times.
So do you go up – are you only doing the ups or are you doing the downs as well?
We've got to go up and down, so –
So is it 170 reps up or is it 170 divided by 2 reps up?
No, so a rep, what it is basically all the way up and all the
and
way down.
And all the way down, okay.
And funny enough, it's the down that's the most painful bit. It's very hard going down.
Really?
Yeah.
Much, much easier to climb up those stairs.
It is, yeah.
And what kind of gradient do we have there? What sort of, how steep is it? Ben's been, I haven't been.
Well, some bits are around about a 45-degree gradient. It's a steep stairway.
Right.
Other bits are a bit more gentle, maybe a 20% gradient. But the whole thing is just brutal.
Mm.
But we need it to be steep. Otherwise, we're going to be doing a running event instead of a climbing event.
Right.
So this is actually perfect venue at the Westcliff Stairs.
So can anyone join? Can anyone start a team?
Well, at the moment, the entries are closed because it was open for corporate teams.
Okay.
But if people do want to try out a couple of stairs, I think I'll encourage them. Come along on the day.
Come along. Support.
There's actually what we're going to have is a Sunflower Fund team, which is you guys out there. Anyone that comes along can join in that team. They can put some money into a donation box.
Right.
And they can come and feel what it feels like.
I'll do a half of one of those reps.
No, I think we need you to come all the way back up again.
No, just leave me at the top and then helicopter me. Sounds very, very good. All right, Ray. Well, thank you for telling us about this, the Everest Challenge. We can find out more by going to sunflowerfund.org.za. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, and if people want to find out more about the events, there is a Facebook page called Everest Challenge, and there's regular posts on that of where it's taking place, who the teams are doing it, and how to also donate some money towards the cause.
That sounds fantastic. No, but a great pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming to see us this morning.
Thank you.
All right, so the Everest Challenge is what everybody's going to be doing, and that's on what dates in September?
No, it's now. It's Saturday. It's this Saturday coming up.
I thought
the
it was
25th.
September. Hang on a second.
The Sunflower Fund campaign.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. About a week later.
Right. So the Sunflower Day campaign is on the 21st of September. This challenge is happening this coming weekend, 25th of August. 15 relay teams, and Ray will be there, and you can go and say hello and join the Sunflower team. Very good. There we go. Handled something like this with aplomb. It's great to see someone who's putting some effort in to help other people and to help the Sunflower Fund do their good work. Thank you, Ray. This is Post Malone, and Ben tells me he stinks.
Well, it's common knowledge, Gareth. No. He's got one of those liberal hygiene routines.
I really am. I miss out on pop culture stuff. Like, I used to be really on top of these things.
It's
I used
fine,
to know.
I'm on it.
But Post Malone stinks. Who knew?
I saw a video the other day of all the Hollywood stars who have hygiene issues.
Oh,
and you know, I could have told you even before I was told. I can just see it in a person.
That they're dirty.
Yes. Johnny Depp.
Go onto your computer right now, type in Post Malone, and just go image search Post Malone, and you tell me this guy cares about showers.
There's
Johnny Depp, you were saying?
Oh, Jessica Simpson, who only brushes her teeth like once a week.
What does she do for the rest of the day?
She doesn't believe in using toothpaste or
something. Does she at least use mouthwash?
Does she floss at least?
But no. Johnny Depp is filthy, right?
Brad Pitt, also known to hone quite a bit.
Self-indulgent behavior. Like, I'm a star, I don't need to wash. Like, screw you.
I'm really out of it, though, because someone told me about the overdose, the Demi Lovato overdose.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was completely.
I can tell you anything about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got to talk about that just now. First things first, Rich Mulholland is on the line, and we're going to talk to him this morning, the reality check. Hey, Rich, I heard that you you had a terrific time in Iceland. Where is he? Is it on the phone?
Skype.
Well, he's on Skype. I've got Skype on here. Why isn't he coming through? Hello.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. I'm shouting into the wilderness, and finally you howled back. How are you, Rich?
I'm fantastic, thanks. And Iceland was amazing.
Oh, man, I just saw some pictures. It looked like you two had the best time.
Yeah, I mean, pictures will always show you having the best time, but we really did. It's a great place, except that driving a manual car on the other side of the road is a lot harder than driving an automatic car on the other side of the road because the gears move the other
way. Arm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not just a different arm, because like an automatic is a different arm, but you still like moves things in the same direction when you set it. But you're now going right to go into up gears instead of left to go up gears. So even the direction is different. And I also drove us around a traffic circle the wrong direction once, which nearly led to an end of my marriage.
And did you cause any accidents?
I came close because what I kept on doing is I kept on lining the car up where I am in the middle of the road.
Uh-oh.
But that put Jasmine on the other side of the road facing oncoming traffic because I would line myself up perfectly how I'm used to where I'm just a little bit to the right of the middle of the road.
Listen,
she'd be like, oh, holy crap.
I know you have to get a special international driver's license because they won't rent you a car in most of these countries unless you do. But that doesn't mean you've done the practice. It doesn't mean you've actually been in the car with the driver's side and on the other side, and driven on roads where you have to be on the other side. And it's damn confusing.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it a fair amount nowadays. Although I must say, I got an international license, but mm-hmm. I've never taken anywhere. I hand everybody a little South African card thing, and they're always fine with it. Huh. But I find if you are going to do it, automatic makes life a whole bunch easier. Even if you drive stick in South Africa, I would say, I mean, I don't ever, but I would say get an automatic when you travel.
Yeah. There's no need to, you don't need to be changing gears unless you're Lewis Hamilton.
Exactly.
All right.
Jeez, I could do a whole chat on that.
So what's happening? What do you got bothering you this week?
Andreas Pavel.
Who's that?
He's the guy who invented portable stereos. He's basically the guy that made it. He was like sitting at home one day and he had earphones, but he wanted to walk around and he was bummed that he couldn't take everything with him. So he basically invented a portable rig. It was like 1973 where he could like stand up and walk about. And I think this has led to some problems in society. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan. I have my earphones everywhere. Like I've got so many different sets in case batteries run out and stuff.
Is this guy, he's the one who invented those boom boxes that people used to carry on their shoulder in the 1980s?
No, he basically wanted to have high fidelity audio when he traveled. So he had a setup at home where he could put on really, really nice headphones.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he was out, all he could take was a boom box. And he wanted the ability to be able to turn a device into a portable portable player that you could clip onto your belt or something and then plug in a pair of headphones and have high quality audio when you went. And so he was basically the guy, he was like the forefather of the iPods and things like that we have today.
So why is he a social problem?
So I was got involved in a conversation on LinkedIn the other day. And it was around this idea of the debate that they were actually having was between Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours for, it takes to master something.
Yeah.
And the guy was he was challenging this somewhat. And he was saying, somebody else says about it just takes 20 hours to become proficient in something.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I buy that. And I buy there's a difference between mastery and proficiency. And I think we need both to some degree in different aspects of our life. But he was talking about his morning routine. He wakes up every day and he does 2 hours of learning. And he learns for 2 hours. And this is how he becomes proficient in many things. And I think there's a disconnect between learning and proficiency. And I think that maybe it's become such a cultural trend that we've become learning machines. So we have the ability to plug in our podcasts and our, audiobooks and things like this and literally listen all the time and learn all the time. And even a show like yours, I find, and I know your caller earlier mentioned this as well, but it really is a learning thing. Like I listen to learn. I pick up information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if what happens if we're having knowledge, if knowledge fatigue is creating action paralysis. That we're learning so much shit and we're filling our brain with so much stuff that we're not actually giving ourselves any time to process that. Because I'm working with a couple of people at the moment, kind of mentoring them and stuff. And they've all read all the books and they're all listening to all the right podcasts and doing all the right things. But they're actually, listening to all the right things, but they're doing nothing. They're not changing because they're so hell-bent. What if the next guy who, maybe I should listen to this book or maybe I should read this or do that before I act? And I'm wondering if we're not doing this to our detriment. Was it simpler when there was one textbook that we would learn?
Yeah. Well, maybe life, our human brains, and this is where we've got to take stock of kind of where we're at. Maybe we can only deal with so much new information on a daily basis. Maybe because our ancestors were not used to the stream of information that we have now. And there was no way that you could learn as much as you do in a given day now, in a lifetime in 1700 and something. I mean, people used to pick up a pamphlet, and it would give them more information then than they could probably handle. And now we've got just any amount of information about anything at any given time. There's just no way our brains are evolutionarily predisposed to handle that.
Of course, and they're not, right? So when we teach presentation theory, we talk about the cognitive demands.
Yeah.
And I mean, just even on basic short-term learnings, you can only hold about 6 facts in your brain at any given time until it's actively processed. And at that point, it goes from your short-term memory, from your kind of RAM, into your hard drive you know, your SSD, your HDD, your hard drive memory. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's remembered when it's linked to an existing memory. So like if you take Ray, Ray was on earlier and he was talking about leukemia and he was telling us about how easy it actually is and not painful and how all of us can go and do this. And I guarantee you at that point, every single person listening, driving their car, they were like, I'm doing this. I got to go and I've got to call this number and I've got to do the test and find out how I can help. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is then they've still got to drive another 20, 30 minutes to work and there's a whole bunch of other things and they learn a whole bunch more. And unfortunately, Ray and the leukemia gets parked off into their – it gets put into their queue and your brain goes through what's called cognitive dumping, which is just where it randomly drops stuff out to make space for new knowledge because it's the only way it can cope. So it holds things in short-term memory, just like your phone or your computer does, until it can no longer hold it that. And it just says, okay, well, I'm going to drop this because you're not using it, and it'll fill it with new information. And the other problem is decision paralysis. So we know about this. We know that the more data you have about making a choice, the less likely you are to make one. So there was a research done with guys where they had a person who needed hip replacement surgery and they gave the doctors all the facts and said, would you go for surgery? And they looked at all the facts and he said, yes. And then just the day before they said, hold on a second. There's one more pill that could potentially be available. Do you want to try it? And 50% of the doctors said, yes, we will try it. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. So when they were given one more choice, because it's a very invasive surgery, they said that. So then they said, well, I wonder what happens if we give them two choices. So instead they turned around and they said, okay, so in fact, you know, there's actually two more pills that we could try before going. Now, you would think before going for surgery, you would think in this case what would happen is even more doctors would say, well, let's try the alternatives. But what actually happened is significantly less doctors did because now they've got too many choices to make. There are too many things and they're going through decision paralysis. And I think this happens to some degree with knowledge. And I think we need to learn less and act more. I mean, at the moment, I'm listening to a bloody book on astrophysics. Just so I can have a conversation with my son. I have no idea what's going on. Anyway, I was listening to an article that my friend Pierre Duplessis posted. He's a really, really smart guy. He's got a great newsletter. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about – the article was on silence and on the importance of silence and how little we utilize it. And kind of two of the quotes that I liked were this, and you know I'm the least religious person in the world, but one was by Mother Teresa. And when asked about what she says when she prays, she answered, I don't say anything, I just listen. And then when they asked what God said to her, she said, nothing, he just listens as well. And I thought that was pretty cool. And the idea is sometimes we just have to have nothing going on. The irony is that this was all about a book on silence. This passage was taken from a book on silence, and I downloaded the audio book of it last night.
So there's no silence going on there. What I'm curious about, though, is, I mean, you mentioned how this audio, that this guy who invented essentially the listening device that you could carry around, the portable listening device, and how that's taken away silence from us. I often think that most people are very uncomfortable with silence. People don't seem to be now, and perhaps it was different, you know, 100 years ago or whatever. But when people are in a situation where there's silence, they almost become very anxious because it's like you need the noise. There needs to be something going on, music or, you know, if you think about how people socialize.
I guess to some degree music could be the silence, right? I think the silence relative to what I'm talking about right now is the absence of information. Mm. The absence of adding more content for our brains to process. So when I write, I have an instrumental playlist. And it's got a lot of soundtracks and things like that. And I don't like writing in silence, but I do like having just some sort. I don't like having lyrics or things like that. And I think that, you know, before I came on, you gave the listeners a song, that Smelly Guy. Mm. So Smelly Mix, Smelly Bum or whatever. Yeah, there we go. And that actually gave people time to stop and process. So maybe some people did sit there and think about what Ray had said and think, okay, cool. Yeah. Maybe they did actually just send themselves a little email or a message or say, okay, I'm going to go get checked. And the song gave them time to do that. But had maybe we jumped straight from Ray to me or to something else, maybe that wouldn't have happened. And I think having those little cognitive breaks, which could be in the form of a song, are possibly helpful.
Yeah, I think you're right. And make a bit of time in your day for the silence, right? clear your thoughts. And this is why so many people are turning to things like transcendental meditation. I'm certainly seeing a lot more people who are spending time doing non-information things in a world where we're so busy learning, as you've already pointed out, where everybody's under such pressure to be on top of all the info that's out there, that they don't take the time to actually let their brains sort and file this stuff. The only silence you get is when you sleep.
Right. You know, when I catch people, I think the job is not to learn. Learning was never the end state. The end state was to have information in our brain that made us better. And when I catch somebody, if I'm doing a talk or a speaking gig and I catch somebody writing down, I always say to them, I hope you're not writing down notes because you're not going to do anything with notes. You know, this isn't like you take notes at school because you've got to answer an exam, but no one's going to test you. I said, I hope you're writing down actions. The only thing that matters to me is that somebody walks away from a talk with a couple of checkboxes with actions. You know, I want to do this. I need to do that. And I think we need to get better at taking any information we have, and instead of hearing it as, oh, I want to write that down. I just heard that. What we have to be writing down when we learn something new is the action that we're going to take as a result of it. Because only when you start doing that will we start making the meaningful changes.
I love it. So I'm gonna give you a moment to download all of this that Rich has said to us. Rich, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
Fantastic. Love it. Bye.
And here's something that's probably apposite. Depeche Mode, Enjoy the Silence. Okay, then we'll see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Coming up, a replay of a Julius Malema interview from just a year and a half ago. What?
News.
The Unnews. Well, why did I start Depeche Mode? God, I'm stupid. All right, well, at least they hadn't started singing yet, so there wasn't any information.
Okay, sure.
All right. Okay, do you want to hear the Unnews?
Yes, we do.
All right, good, because it's here. It's time. So, the state capture inquiry officially starts today with people taking to the stand to testify against a series of dubious events. Jacob Zuma is on the menu here, of course, and with this next appearance, he will officially log up the most court hours by a South African lawyer or otherwise. This guy. Kevin Spacey's new movie is not going well. Actually, it's a complete disaster, but entering a dark room where Kevin Spacey is involved in any way is pretty much the worst idea you can have right now. And finally, the rugby championship is underway, and with that, people are not terribly bothered. It's basically a dressed-up version of Super Rugby, and the New Zealand team wins in the end. That's what Ben says. You know it's true. If you've listened to any of his sport, you'll know it's true. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Here's Depeche Mode. Thank you very much for joining us today. CliffCentral.com